Well, I am obviously not Tracy Fox. And also, I just want to clarify, our session, we had put in a proposal for a whole session on competitive foods, and we only got 15 minutes. And so the other speakers weren't coming, and I was, so I ended up with the slot. So I'm not only going to talk about state and local approaches. In fact, my part of the panel is mostly about national approaches. And so we're not the best fit this morning, but I did want to just clarify that, you know, Tracy and others wanted to present, but we only got this one little time slot. So so foods outside of meals is an issue that lots of people have been focusing on. I think when you look at what's been happening around obesity policy in the last couple of years, I feel very optimistic and energized by all the things that are happening. You know, that the nutrition movement is very old. You know, we've been working on nutrition, many of us, for decades. And, you know, going back to fortification of grains and iodizing salts and, you know, starting WIC and school lunch and school breakfast, that the nutrition movement has been around for a long time. And I think it's always been a strong and robust movement. But with the concern about childhood obesity, has taken off even further. There's been a lot of progress on safe routes to school, on menu labeling. You know, more than a dozen major companies have agreed to cut back on junk food marketing to kids. So overall, I feel very optimistic. I think probably the piece of childhood obesity policy on the nutrition side of the energy equation that has gotten the most attention are school foods. That when communities come together, they think about kids first. You know, politically, they're very appealing. And they think about schools when they think about kids, because that's where kids are. You know, that kids are already eating so many of their calories, a third to a half of their calories on average on a typical school day. I think another major benefit of focusing on school foods is that we're not asking schools to do anything new. That schools are already in the business of feeding kids. What we're asking them is just to change the way they feed them. You know, instead of having certain things at lunch or certain things in the vending machine, we're asking them to make changes. So in some ways, this is much easier than asking them to, you know, hire a new PE teacher or build a gym or some of the other things that we also want them to do. This can be a good place to start. So today, I'm just going to talk about the foods that are sold outside of meals. People call these different things: competitive foods, non-reimbursable foods, foods outside of meals. None of them easy. I think junk food in schools is the easiest way to talk about them, but these are the foods sold out of vending machines, school stores, fundraisers, a la carte, and for those of you who don't work on this area as much, you know the a la carte foods are the foods sold in the cafeteria but outside of the school meal programs. And they're probably the worst component of the food sold outside of meals. That's the most food that's available in schools outside of meals, and often it's pizza and French fries and other foods that are low in nutritional quality. So the other thing that's interesting, I think, about working on foods outside of meals is that there's opportunity for change at the local level, at the state level, and the national level, and there's activity, there's policy change going on at all those different levels. So at the local level, there was already a lot going on before the wellness policies passed, but the wellness policies have helped to spark a lot of change as well. The Congress passed the Child Nutrition Reauthorization in 2004. During the 2004 reauthorization, we were working to get stronger national standards for foods that are sold outside of meals, and what we got are wellness policies. So one thing that's really important to understand about wellness policies right from the get-go is that this was a political compromise. We weren't lobbying for wellness policies. We were lobbying to get soda and junk food out of schools, and we got wellness policies. I think it was a reasonable political compromise. It was a good first step. It sparked a lot of thinking about this issue in schools that weren't already doing it. When schools do this right, they pull together an advisory committee, a wellness committee, a health council, whatever they want to call it, with parents and students and school administrators and others. And once you get those key stakeholders together talking about school foods, many schools realize that there are a lot of places in the school nutrition environment that need change. By law, the wellness policy requirement require schools to look at nutrition education, physical activity broadly, and the foods that are sold outside of meals, though many schools also look at other things. Now, while the wellness policy, I think, is a nice, jolt, it's a nice way to spark some change on local school nutrition policy, it's certainly not the whole answer, and we know that there are a lot of problems with school wellness policies. If you look just at foods outside of meals, we see, you know, only about 20 to 30% of districts are setting specific nutrition standards through their wellness policy or through other means to address those foods. So one of the things that we're going to be working on during the child nutrition reauthorization is to strengthen the school wellness policy requirement to require that there be a wellness policy committee. It doesn't have to be a new committee. It can be working within an existing committee. We are going to work to try to get more funding for school wellness policies, for technical assistance, for training, to require some disclosure of the wellness policies to parents, to school, to other school activists, community organizations, public health people, and a few other things. So the National Alliance for Nutrition and Activity, which APHA is a member of, is working on a number of policy recommendations for the 2009 child nutrition reauthorization, and a number of them have to do with strengthening school wellness policies. Many advocacy groups and coalitions around the country have also been working on policies to address the nutritional quality of school foods through state policy. And in just 2007 alone, there were 200 bills introduced in 40 states to address the nutritional quality of foods that are sold outside of meals. So there's been a lot of activity in this area. Those policies, though only a handful of those policies have actually passed. So one thing that we did in last year was we looked at the strength of every state's policy for vending, a la carte, fundraisers, and other foods sold outside of meals. We looked at the strength of the nutrition standards. Did those standards apply to all grades, the whole campus, the whole school day? We looked at fundraising. I wanted to just make sure to point that out, you know, as an important part of the school nutrition environment, both in terms of the food that is sold to children during the school day and after the school day, but also in terms of junk food marketing to kids, that companies pull together these kits and other ways that they can basically enlist children in selling junk food and cultivate brand loyalty as well as sell them food now. So branded fundraisers or, you know, junk food fundraisers are something we looked at a lot. On the fundraisers, there are lots of ways to sell. There are lots of things to sell other than junk food that where schools can make just as much money. And I'll just point out this resource. We did a report last year called Sweet Deals and looked at dozens of different fundraisers that that schools can carry out that are easy to implement, that are profitable, where schools actually make a lot more money than selling, you know, soda and candy out of vending machines. So this is what we found in our analysis. We do see some progress in state policies for addressing junk food in schools. You can see particularly in the South, there's been a lot more progress. And I think that's because there's been more concern about obesity. And there's just been more attention to these issues. Even though in the North, you know, we need obesity policy just as much as in the South, there just has been a lot more attention to this issue. We rated every state's policy. And as you can see, only two states got an A, Kentucky and Oregon. A number of states got a B, but overall, two-thirds of states have very weak or no policy for addressing junk food in schools, that we still have a long, long way to go in terms of state policies. Now, what most states that you see that have an F, they don't have any state policy, so they rely on the national policy. There are national nutrition standards for vending, a la carte, and school stores. USDA put those into place in the 1970s. They only limit the sale of foods of minimal nutritional value. So those are foods that are basically devoid of any nutrients. So jelly beans, lollipops, breath mints, soda pop is included in that. But the nutrition standards don't address calories, probably one of the most important things we should have standards for, fat, saturated fat, trans fat, sodium, added sugars. So they're not comprehensive nutrition standards. The standards are really out of date in terms of nutrition science. The other way that the standards are out of date is that they only apply in the cafeteria during mealtimes. And probably in the 1970s that made sense because that's where kids were mostly eating. But now kids are eating all over the whole campus, the whole school day. And so we need to have nutrition standards that apply to the whole school, the whole day. So we have been working with over 100 organizations through the National Alliance for Nutrition and Activity, or NANA, on a national bill that would require USDA to update their nutrition standards for foods that are sold outside of meals. And we have built on the national momentum, you know, of local and state policies and been working to get members of Congress interested in this issue. I think we're getting very close. You know, the title that Tracy came up with on this session, you know, competitive foods in schools, are we there yet? And I think almost there. I think next year we have a unique opportunity to pass legislation that will create stronger, that will update the nutrition standards for foods sold outside of meals. It won't be easy. It's never easy to pass a bill, even if it's totally, you know, non-controversial. But, you know, with a controversial issue like this, where there are big, you know, multinational corporations involved, this will be difficult to pass. But I think that the time is right, that the momentum is there, the concern about childhood obesity is there. Most likely, the bill will look very much like or almost identical to the bill that, to the amendment that Senator Harkin worked on to the Farm Bill last year, which actually lays out the nutrition standards in the bill. And I know you can't see this from the back, but it's as much of a reminder for me as, and I'm happy to share the details of the nutrition standards. But the nutrition standards look very similar to what has been passed in other states, although as a package, the nutrition standards are stronger than what any state has passed. There might be some individual components, like one component or two component that another state has that's a little bit stronger, but as a whole, we've compared this policy to every state's policy, and as a whole, this policy will be a step forward for all states and is a huge step forward for the overwhelming majority of states. You know, as I mentioned, two-thirds have virtually no standards. So it will set out categories of beverages that are and aren't allowed to be sold, and then would set nutrition standards, nutrient-based standards for snacks and other foods that are sold outside of meals. So limits on calories, fat, saturated fat, trans fat, sugars, and sodium. But it also, I think, unlike many state bills, requires that there be a positive nutritional contribution of the food, that we're not just looking at foods that are low in the bad stuff, but also that provide some positive nutritional benefit. So I think using this approach of having the standards in the bill provides a number of advantages for us. One is that we'll get nutrition standards much earlier, that the standards will go into effect very soon after the bill passes, as opposed to having to go through a long rulemaking process through USDA. Those of you that work with USDA know rulemaking takes a long time, and if we leave this just to regulation, it could take, you know, 6, 7, 8 years for proposed rule, final rule. The other thing, as I already mentioned, the standards are very strong. They're stronger as a whole than what any state has. I think also by using this approach, the bill has a much better chance of passing. We not only have over 100 public health and education groups that support this approach, this is just some of the organizations on the public health side, but also we have gotten the food companies finally to agree to support this. And you know, that's been a result of all of your work, all the work that's happened in states and localities to get Coke and Pepsi and the other companies finally basically to cry uncle and say, okay, enough. You know, we just want this issue behind us. We're sick of bad press. We know that we can't sell soda in schools anymore. They want this behind them. So we actually have most of the major food and beverage companies supporting this approach, which makes all the difference in the world to passing a bill. I think also not only does it make it more likely that we can pass a bill, but will improve the chances of strong implementation of the standards. Because not only will we in the public health community be committed to a set of standards that we can all work toward, but also the food companies will be reformulating their products and making products that are that meet these standards that then can be sold in schools. So I think another key point with this approach is that that we have to recognize that getting junk food out of schools is just the first step toward addressing obesity. So many communities have been focusing just on this issue, and we need to get past this at some point and work on other things. That we can't afford to spend, you know, a couple of decades to get junk food out of schools. If you think back to the map that I showed, you know, with only a dozen states having reasonable nutrition policies for foods that are sold outside of meals, you think about how long it will take for most states to get to a reasonable standard. Obesity is such a complex problem. We have so many different issues to work on. First of all, just in schools, you know, wellness policies, junk food marketing in schools, better PE, more PE, safe routes to schools, increasing reimbursement rates for school meals, improving the nutritional quality of meals, school parties and food rewards. Those are two, you know, on my list that drive me crazy, both as a nutrition professional and a mom, and I think set a bad tone, set kids off with on a bad path of, you know, having a relationship with food that isn't very healthy. Rewarding kids with junk food sends a bad message to them and can set up a relationship between food and mood that can last a lifetime. So you think about just all we need to do in schools with implementation and policy change, but then think about in the whole community, in a whole state, all the things that we need to do, looking at, you know, junk food marketing in schools, menu labeling, looking at restaurant foods and what's actually on the menu, community design, improving the food, you know, everywhere else kids go, the library, the zoo, the boys club and girls club, all the other places where kids eat, access to healthy foods, promoting breastfeeding. There's so much to do. You know, we have to think strategically about where we're going to start and how long we can afford to spend on each one. So I think one of the things that's very appealing to me about national nutrition standards to get junk food out of schools is that we need to get this done so that we can get on to all these other things that need to be done. We really can't afford to spend the time school by school by school 120,000 times. So I'll just end by saying we're going to need your help. I don't know how many of you already have talked to your member of Congress or your senators about the Child Nutrition Promotion and School Lunch Protection Act, but in the coming year with the Child Nutrition Reauthorization, we're going to need everybody to work together for a strong set of policies that address good nutrition for kids through school lunch, school breakfast, WIC, and the other programs that are being reauthorized. I know we are all, you know, we're in different places. We have different skills. We feel comfortable or our job will allow us to do certain things and not others. But, you know, we'll really need help with having you reach out to your congressional representative and your senators. Whether it's writing a letter, sending an email, making a phone call, doing a group visit with other colleagues to ask them to support the child nutrition reauthorization priorities, getting others to write and call. You know, if you work for a state or local agency and you don't think you can do any advocacy as a part of your job, to get others to do it, organizations that you belong to get them involved. You can join the National Alliance for Nutrition and Activity. I see a lot of NANA members in the organization from different organizations as well. But But it's going to be a really important year next year for addressing child nutrition and childhood obesity. And I look forward to working with many of you to make some important strides forward in addressing these issues. Thank you.
We do have time for one question.
That's a really good question, and I think engaging the parents as well as the kids are really important. One of the things that appeals to me about working on school nutrition is it's a way to help people understand this whole concept of policy and environmental change, that when you talk about, you know, nutrition is more than just personal responsibility and personal choice, people's eyes kind of glaze over. They don't quite understand it. Everybody thinks they're making their own food choices totally independently. They don't see the politics, the financing, the food availability. People don't see all of those influences on their eating habits. When you talk about the school nutrition environment, it's a little bit easier for people to understand, and it can be a way to introduce them to this whole idea of policy and environmental change. So I think that's one important concept that we're kind of modeling and teaching through working on school nutrition policies. With parents, I generally find that the overwhelming majority of parents want junk food out of schools. It's the vocal minority who are fighting for the cupcakes, fighting to keep the Cheetos in the vending machine, that it's really the minority of parents. And so I think helping to set the tone, helping to empower the parents that do really care about this, helping them to be more vocal, to help the school administrators and others recognize that most of the parents want healthier foods for their kids. And for those who don't, you know, finding ways not so much to quiet them, but to, you know, put their perspective in balance. The school wellness policy committees also can help a lot with engaging parents and with engaging the kids. While she changes slides, do we have time for one more question?
No. No, I'm sorry. If you still have burning questions, please wait around until the end. Our next speaker is Lisa Crapo. She's with Samuel & Associates in Oakland, California, and she'll talk about food and beverage environment and neighborhood stores, baseline findings from the Healthy Eating Active Communities Program.